I'm Kyle.
And I'm Trevor, and welcome to Catching Up on Cinema. If you aren't familiar with the program, Catching Up on Cinema is a film analysis podcast wherein we introduce each other to films, expand our cinematic horizons, and, in essence, catch up on our cinema. So, it is the month of March, 2024, and we are at the finale of a little event month that we've been calling Mostly Hoodie Month. So, the title, of course, is a reference to the actor, the Hollywood actor from Texas, Woody Harrelson. So this themed month comes to us from my wonderful co-host Kyle. So Kyle, tell us a little something about why we're talking about Woody this month and what film we'll be talking about today.
Fuck up, Trevor!
Today we will be covering Play It to the Bone from the year 2000. So we picked Woody because he's an interesting actor. I really like him. I think that he's got this weird energy where he can be very funny, but he can also be kind of menacing. And, well, he's neither in this movie, but then again, nobody is anything in this movie. This is Play It to the Bone from 2000, like we said, starring Woody, Antonio Banderas, and then a whole bunch of other people, but the other main person is Lolita Davidovich.
Yeah, correct. So the reason why Kyle graced our ears with that lovely fuck off Trevor drop just now is because it just so happens that this was my one contribution, my one pick for the entirety of Mostly Hoodie Month. Goddamn, I fucked us. I fucked us bad, Kyle.
Betrayal!
Well, I mean, I'm not playing the blame game here, but you did go... This is the same director, Ron Shelton, as White Men Can't Jump, and this has worse reviews than that movie. So it was kind of there. Like, you probably could have inferred that it was not going to be good, maybe.
Yeah, for the record, folks at home, if you're not keeping score at home, we did watch White Men Can't Jump, I believe, to kick off Mostly Hoodie Month, and Kyle did not like that film.
No.
I found it to be mostly enjoyable. However, there is kind of a big difference between our tastes in movies. That would be Kyle and I, our tastes in movies, in the form of like sports dramas, sports films, or something that generally appeal to me, whereas they hold less interest for Kyle.
Yeah.
So right there, it's like a strike against it. And this one, being as it's a Ron Shelton film and all he seems to do is sports films, that's another knock against it. I was drawn to this one because it's a boxing film, which, again, if you're not keeping score at home, is my sport of choice. Like, that's like one of the major sports that I actually actively care about and pay attention to. So I'm often drawn to boxing films, of which there are many. Of which there were quite a few in the 90s, probably because of the big popularity boom of Mike Tyson in the late 80s and, you know, Oscar De La Hoya in the late 90s and whatnot. It was kind of a big deal. Anyway, this movie, as we said, comes to us from director Ron Shelton, who, as I mentioned earlier, does seem to be like a sports movie aficionado. He has some outright classics under his belt, none of which we've talked about here on the show, but Bull Durham, I believe, is in the Criterion Collection. It's a beloved baseball film with an all-star cast. And on top of that, like what little I know of that film, because I've seen about a third of it, I didn't actually finish it back in the day, it actually bears some resemblance, at least in terms of its character placement and its structure, to this film, which is kind of odd. It's, you know, an instance of a director repeating himself. But what's particularly vexing about this is that this is a writer-director project. So it's like he fucked up twice, basically, because like I started things off by saying this, I fucked us. This, just to lay it all out there, this is a bad film.
This game sucks!
Oh, yeah.
I don't often say that on Catching Up on Cinema, but this is straight up a very bad film. Like, it has very little redeeming qualities to it, even in terms of like production details and things like that. I don't have much good things to say about it. But I do have things to say about it. So, Kyle, I'll leave it to you to guide us into this conversation.
Yeah.
Hey, how about the feelings out of my fucking teeth?
Okay, so, I don't even know where to start on this one. I guess we could just give like a plot summary. I'm not going to say over the hill, but two late in their career semi-professional boxers are called up the day of a fight to drive from Los Angeles to Vegas to fight each other in a $25,000 payout match, I think is what it's supposed to be. They get $25,000 apiece.
I think they think they're getting 50, but at the end of the movie, spoiler alert, it gets cut down to 25.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And they drive together with, at the time, Antonio Banderas, the character Caesar, his girlfriend, but she dumps him very early in the trip, but it still seems like they're together, but they drive across country, or not cross country, to from Los Angeles to Vegas to go to the fight. If you, from that plot description, if you think that sounds stupid, it is. Because it's pretty dumb.
Yeah, Kyle actually had a very wonderful soundbite before the mics heated up. He referred to the movie as mostly car.
Yeah.
which is factually correct.
The car's a character.
The car is a character. And it's also present for roughly half the runtime of the film. And another thing that Kyle tossed out there before the mics heated up was he was very correct in labeling the movie not a boxing film. It is, by the time you get to the second half, only problem is we spend the first hour of the film. It is slightly over 2 hours long, by the way. That's another strike against it. The first hour of the film is just yada, 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 just mouth noises. We are faffing about. And unfortunately, writer-director Ron Shelton, the dialogue is one of the worst things about this movie.
Oh.
Is it lacks any sort of snap or character to it.
Or purpose?
I found myself like pressing back into the cushions of my couch, cringing at the film at times, where I was just like, I maintain, and I've told Kyle this several times, that I maintain that the premise of this film is terrific. I think it's a wonderful concept. But the execution in this film is straight up cringe at times. And a lot of it comes down to the words that are coming out of the characters' mouths, where it's just like, you don't believe much of any of it. A lot of the characterizations are nebulous and hazy and inconsistent on top of that. And it just feels really haphazardly put together. It feels lazy. Like, it feels like if we had a very talented writer doctoring some of the dialogue to punch it up or something, this could have been pretty good. Because we have talented actors in it, but they're not really being asked to do much of anything at all that entertains me.
Yeah, I'm not. It's just a matter of taste. I disagree. I don't like this idea for a story, and I think I've talked about it before. Like, two people that are friends or are close together have to fight each other. I'm like that. I've fought somebody, but I've had to wrestle like a friend of mine for a starting position, and it's not something that's, you don't enjoy it. There's nothing good about it, but there's nothing, it's just like something that has to be done. Like, we just have to do this. We have to get this over with. So in this kind of situation, like, these guys are pretty close. They're both going to get paid. Like, they're going to get paid. There's just, you can't get into that psychopath Michael Jordan mindset of like, I have to make up something to hate this person for. Like, it just can't be done. And I think there's always a piece missing, I feel, like, from it being an actual bout, like it being an actual fight, if that makes any sense.
It does, but I'm going to push back on your pushback, because I maintain that the premise, if done correctly, I think there's a lot of inherent drama in it. Like, if you crafted some very interesting layered characters and really played up the premise, because that's the biggest part of that's the biggest problem with the movie. Is that the premise, like the end point of the journey of these two characters is going to be the two of them clashing with each other physically. Mm-hmm. What they needed to do was really emphasize the severity of that and the desperation. Mm-hmm. Because this movie launches into things at kind of an odd angle where it's like, I would have cared to have known a bit more about these people before we hit the road. Like, it would have been nice to see somebody with, like, a stack of bills or something. Like, make it known that at least one of them has a measure of desperation and really needs this, maybe a bit more than the other one. And then on top of that, what you do is you really play up the tension of them being stuck in the same vehicle together the whole time. And then you do interesting things. Like, there are so many opportunities to build interesting conflict. Like, For instance, the Lolita Davidovich, her character, I don't know what the fuck her deal is. Like, I don't know what this character is, but they could have done so many interesting things with her. And I realize I'm launching way too deep into this. I apologize because we haven't given any context. But the way this character's set up, she's the one driving the whole time. She is currently in a relationship with Antonio Banderas, who is a Spanish boxer. They've been together a few months, and he asks for her help getting to Las Vegas so they can do this fight together. So she is driving them the whole time, and she is encouraging both of them the whole time. Like, she's stroking both of their egos, but she's also simultaneously, like, stripping them down verbally. So she's playing all these mind games with them, and I don't really know why. Because in Bull Durham, the premise of that movie is that Susan Sarandon is, like, taking a young buck under her wing and teaching him the ropes of how to be a better ball player. That's the whole thing. And you kind of get that vibe from this character, but the end point of the story is, like, she's like, I love both of you guys, and I encouraged both of you to beat the ever-loving shit out of each other for no goddamn reason. What Kyle, like, I realize I've been talking for a long time, so I'll try to pull back here, but I have a lot of ideas as to how you could have made this an actual interesting film. What I thought and what I hoped was going to happen was that she was maneuvering one of them to win and one to lose so she could bet on them, because they laid the groundwork for that. She mentions that she's into money. Like, that's her motivation for going to Vegas, is she wants to make her fortune. What I thought and what I hoped was going to happen is that she was going to psychologically twist the screws of both of the guys on the road trip, like really psychologically tear down one and really boost up the other, because she knows both of them intimately. That is something we learned, is that she used to be with Woody Harrelson, now she's with Antonio Banderas. So she would use her inside knowledge to, like, psychologically fuck with both of them, and then be revealed to be a villain at the end, having bet on the fight or something. I'm that, sorry, Kai. You can come back into the conversation now.
That,
everything that guy just said is bullshit.
That would make more sense. That would be something interesting happening in the film. But yeah, I don't understand what her... Because she's actually more rooting for Antonio Banderas during this. She's just like, yeah, I'm breaking up with you, but we're still kind of together, and I'm going to be kind of rooting for you off the side, there. But then she's also pitching number two on just a regular white sock with late. I don't know what the fuck that sock's supposed to be. Yeah,
it's like it has a silk rim to it that you pull it up by or something.
Yeah, I don't know. Ron Shelton doesn't seem to write women very well, because Rosie Perez also kind of has a problem. Like, what's her deal? Like, does she have a job? No, she has a drinking problem, and she's trying to get on Jeopardy. Other than that, that's her whole thing. It's just those two things in that movie. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know!
Yeah, I think you're right. He may have issues writing female characters. Lucy Liu is terrible in this. Like, not her as a person, but, like, her character is just awful.
She didn't have a ton of great roles in her career that I've seen. Like, aside from her in Kill Bill, like, other than that, like, I don't know. She hasn't really had a lot of great roles.
I agree, but it's also worth tossing out there that it's kind of like a quietly known thing in Hollywood that oftentimes Asian women are typecast as, yeah, it's called the Dragon Lady or the Sex Kitten, and this is the Sex Kitten.
Yeah. Oh, she's a sex.
She's been the Dragon Lady in Kill Bill.
Well, I think she was a Dragon Lady Sex Kitten in Payback. I think she was two sides of the same coin in there.
Yeah, like, yeah. She did. It's, yeah, like that's acting talent.
Yeah, she does it all.
That's
there.
A stretch.
And I argue that I think she's good in Payback. I think she's fun in that movie.
She's fun, but yeah. Hey, this marks two movies in as many months wherein I've seen Lucy Liu get close-fisted slugged in the face.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Laid the fuck out in two different movies.
She got hit a few times in Payback. Yeah, I don't know if I could... because this is a genre and this is like a story that I don't really buy, like the friends having to fight each other for money. The same reason why the Warrior, was it Warrior? The
Edgerton. The brothers.
Yeah, I'm like, that did nothing for me. I'm like, I don't know what it is about the thought of people who are close together having to fight each other. Like, it just, it does not interest me at all. I'm sorry, but yeah, I don't know how I would make this movie better, but... One thing I would do, Trevor, one thing that I would do to improve this movie was to just all the dialogue that he's written, all that, just redline that and do something completely different for everything that is said.
Yeah, the first half of this movie is painful to get through, honestly.
This is the jibber-jabber 90s. This came out in 2000. This is just jibber-jabber, 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 jibber-jabber.
Yeah, as I said before the mics heat up, I blame Miramax. I blame the Kevin Smiths and the Quentin Tarantinos of the world for kind of creating the movie environment, for putting that out into the zeitgeist of coffee talk films.
Trevor, let's place this all in Harvey Weinstein's ass, because he was a huge part of both Tarantino and Kevin Smith. And Troy Duffy.
Let's put that right up his ass.
Put that right up his ass. He is the problem for this jibber jabber nonsense. I don't think he had anything to do with this movie, but I'm gonna blame him for it.
I mean, why not? It's a safe bet. It's like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, that shit. I'm sure you'll figure it out.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about all the fun cast members that are in there.
Yeah,
that
is a fun thing to talk about. That's a good. That's a positive. There's a lot of familiar faces in this film that actually bring some cheap pops, like cheap thrills, but unfortunately not many of them do anything.
Yeah, not good use of your Ada Turturro.
That casting though, Kyle.
Yeah.
Spot on.
Yes, she is from Mediterranean ancestry. Yes.
Mm-hmm. You don't say.
Tom Sizemore being an asshole, as he is wont to do in films, doing a pretty good job.
I liked his whole menagerie. I liked Richard Mazur. I liked the voice that Richard Mazur was doing.
The fuck? He sounds like Spinner. He sounds like Spinner from the Death to Smoochie.
he made a choice, and it's...
I stand by it. It's terrific. It was the right choice. Because, like, in terms of, like the boxing promoter world, I very much get like kind of like a Bob Arum vibe from Tom Sizemore's room of goons, where it's like it's an older Jewish like boxing promoter's office, and Richard Mazur has the scar over one eyebrow, which suggests he's a former fighter of some sort, and then that voice is the right choice, and then the lawyer guy who just gets casually assigned to our heroes.
Yeah, but before we jump back into the cast, I have to ask you about how this movie opens, because I think opening your film, setting the tone, I think it's important. It's like, just give the viewer like what's going to happen in this movie, and what happens is the cop or FBI agent from Conspiracy Theory goes to a hotel room where a man is dying next to what appears to be a sex worker who is dead, and then
two
another,
of them.
Give me two.
Two, and then another one that I think might be dead or dying. I'm not sure, but he is foaming at the mouth like just messed up on drugs or something like that. And I'm like, what the fuck am I looking like? That's like, and boobs just for no reason too. It's just like, what the fuck is happening? And there's another boxer who apparently the paramedic in very poor taste says, yeah, I don't think he's fighting. He just went 10 rounds with this telephone pole. So it's just this weird, like, what the fuck? Like, that's how you set this up? Just say the other two had to pull out. Why does it have to be this weird, violent? It's a very strange way to open the film.
Yeah, the movie has a lot of tonal whiplash going on it, because by the time you get to the end of it, it is savagely violent. Like the violence of the boxing, of which is only featured in, it's sprinkled throughout the like middle portion of it, but it's mostly just reserved for the last third of the film. Like, they really make it a point to emphasize how brutal and violent the sport can be. But yeah, to open it with that and then have about 2 hours of the movie just be, you know, kind of cartoonish, almost like, I don't know, goofy, like Farrelly Brothers kind of shit almost. It just doesn't match up very well. The movie technically opens with just helicopter footage of Las Vegas.
I like that.
Which is good.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, the production values there were nice. Ron Shelton seems to have a soft spot for the oldies, and on top of that, like jazz funk and blues in particular. So we get a lot of that sprinkled throughout the film, much like was the case with White Men Can't Jump. But yeah, we have our helicopter footage shots, and then what Kyle had just told us about, those two scenes of the boxers who were supposed to be the co-main event, or the like the top of the undercard of a Mike Tyson event, by the way, in 1999. Yeah. Not a particularly enticing pay-per-view card, if you ask me. just for historical context, folks, in 1999, Mike Tyson was not Iron Mike. He was only a couple years removed from being defeated by Evander Holyfield twice, and in a couple of years would be knocked the fuck out by Lennox Lewis. He was well on his way out in 1999. He was still a box office attraction, but in terms of like a competitor,
no.
He wasn't what he was. But anyway, yeah, I agree with you. The tone there is a little weird. Again, what I kind of was wanting from this movie was more introduction for our two characters, because we just kind of get thrown in there with both of them right away. But like, for instance, like it's a totally different movie, but like Rocky opens with Rocky fighting in a church basement, and it's for peanuts. It's a classic film, Kyle. Anyway, I think it would have been interesting to maybe get that injection of energy in your opening moments of the film, like actually get to see one of our two heroes throw hands for a little bit, and maybe emphasize like their financial situation or something, like show that they like had to drive to a shitty part of town for a last minute gig or something, and they got paid like $50 or something. So it's like the opportunity is all the more enticing to them. But no, like our introduction to them is just like Antonio Banderas hops off the bus and he just goes into the gym and Woody's already there doing sit-ups, and then we're off to the races kind of.
Yeah, I don't even know what they do for a living. Do they box for a living?
That's the big thing. Yeah. Is that like later in the film, when we have commentators talking over their fighting, it's mentioned that they are journeymen. Like they are veterans. They are over the hill. Like literally, it's said in the film. Like given that situation, it's like are these guys able to pay the bills strictly through fighting? Because I don't get that vibe. Like I get the sense that these guys get fights occasionally or something.
Neither one of them have a car in Los Angeles. Like it's not a walking city. You have to have transportation. Like,
but yeah, that would have been another thing, is like show that, you know, they're trying to be boxers. Like show that it's hard out there for a journeyman fighter who, you know, maybe doesn't have the best record or is the most reliable, because that is kind of a subplot with both of them, that they both have some black spots. They have some red in their ledger or whatever you want to call it, in terms of like pleasing their promoters and whatnot. So they're unreliable, and it would have been interesting to maybe explore some of that. But instead we barely scratch the surface on that. And then we have countless minutes of this film that you can't play on YouTube without getting flagged, because there's a certain word, the hard F word, that would be, that gets utilized about 100 times in this movie, and it's for nothing. It's cringe, it's embarrassing, it's painful, and I don't really know why it's there, other than I think they thought it was really fun, like really funny, because I was begging the film to let it go and it just wouldn't. Even at the closing moments of the film, Kyle, we're still doing it. We're still talking about it.
Yeah. The hard F was not as big of a deal back then. Like it was.
I know.
It was flown. Yeah, no. But she brings up an interesting point that has been chattered about, especially regarding like football. Is they're talking about how Antonio Banderas, he's like, hey, I'm... I think he's trying to say he's bisexual. It's not the term that he uses for it, or at least he tried it out. He's just like, yeah, I did some stuff for a year, and this makes Woody so angry. And it's unclear whether or not he's angry because he did it and he's like not secure in his own self to be able to process another man doing that. And it's either that or he's upset that he never told him. It's like, why didn't you tell me about this? And both come up. But Lolita brings up She's like, there has to be gay athletes. It's impossible for there not to be gay professional athletes. And he's just like, that's not how it is. There's no gay. I'm like, that would be an interesting conversation to have. Like, why are there not more openly gay professional athletes in what are, like, tend to be contact sports and tend to be like hyper masculine, like basketball, football, baseball.
Yeah, see, with a more talented writer, you could actually take that initial moment of that comes from that hard F conversation, and turn it into an observational comedy sketch. Like actually go there. Like, actually kind of play with that a little bit. But none of the observations are particularly interesting or funny, and it just sucks. Like it grinds the movie to a halt, and it just makes you wonder, like, what are we doing? And actually, something that I, after I get off this bit, I guess we can get back to the cast.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Kai, I'm all over the place. But something that I thought maybe could have redeemed that, because I was spinning this over in my head countless times, just like being like desperate to find a way to make that acceptable in the film, like make it still kind of work. And the idea that I came up with would be, Antonio Banderas does that as a psychological ploy. He does that because Woody's character is kind of a born-again Christian, mm-hmm. and obviously it makes him very uncomfortable, and he's going to have to, you know, exchange blows with and get physical with this guy that if he's that uncomfortable with just talking about that, like, maybe it's a way to put him on his heels, and then the payoff would be at the end of the movie, he just tells him, oh, I made that up. Like,
yeah.
I was just fucking with you. Like, that could have worked. Maybe it's still rough. Like, it's still not easy to choke down, but like, that's something I thought that maybe could have been interesting.
Yeah. Kind of messing with, like, oh yeah, when I'm getting real close and I feel your breath on my neck. Oh yeah. That's it. Yeah. I love that. Have him
at the diner or something, like fucking with him, like really making him uncomfortable and really have Woody play up like the childish, like, discomfort about it, where it's like, what is your deal, man? Like, you've known this guy for a long time. You're friends. What the fuck?
Yeah. Robert Wagner.
Number two.
It's so weird seeing him without an eye patch. He is... Okay, so you might have to explain something to me. I don't understand what the fuck this all... What is Tom Sizemore and Robert Wagner? What is this conglomerate of dudes that seem like scumbags in a room doing? I don't understand what this all is.
Okay, contrary to what my previous comments may seem like, I actually didn't put this movie under a magnifying glass, so I'm just guessing at this point. I think Tom Sizemore is the fight promoter. That's mm-hmm. pretty clear.
Yeah.
Robert Wagner, I think, is like a Trump-esque figure. I think he's the owner of the venue.
Okay. I think it's his hotel where the fight is happening. Okay.
Exactly. I think he owns the venue.
That's simple as that. But why does Tom Sizemore have so many... I feel like that doesn't need to be that big of an operation. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know what goes into all this.
They have that bit where he's yelling at his secretary, who doesn't seem to be doing much secretarying, if you get my drift. He's yelling at her about where his coffee mug is, and she's like, it's in your hand. Like,
yeah.
He just seems like that kind of guy that's like, he's a yeller and a pointer.
Gotcha.
Like, he needs bodies everywhere to do things for him.
Yeah. just, okay. We'll talk about Antonio Banderas. He's affable, just naturally, I think.
Yeah, he is.
This character is, like, it's weird seeing him so insecure. Like, I feel like he's a very insecure character in this movie.
Yeah. I guess we should talk about both of our protagonists, because the movie actually doesn't really focus on either one of them more than the other, which is kind of nice. Like, they do actually try to play it straight down the middle. His character as a fighter and as a person, that's kind of how you describe him, is he seems insecure. And they try to attribute a lot of it to an incident that gets built up a little too much in the movie. So, like, when the grand reveal finally comes, it's kind of like, meh. Basically, Tom Sizemore hasn't wanted to work with him for quite a while because he joined with Tom Sizemore for a fight that got promoted, like a title fight, basically. And he got knocked out in the first, like, 30 seconds. Like, just a single left hook put him to sleep. And his claim is that he couldn't hear the referee's count. So he was waiting for the count to get up to 8 or 9 so he could get up to his feet and, you know, make the most of the count. And he claims he couldn't hear it. So Tom Sizemore took it to be that he was a quitter, that he took a dive, basically. And so he has a lot of trauma associated with that. He's like, I had the biggest opportunity in my life get squandered by my inability, like just 1 second of me being incompetent or something. And so he is very, very insecure in that way. And on top of that, he's often deferential to Woody. Like, he listens to him. Like Woody's kind of the big brother character between the two of them. He's supposed to be more experienced. And so when he gives Antonio advice, he's prone to listen to it. Which, again, in terms of, like, setting up these characters, if you have somebody who is deferential to the other one, who is... Think Pumping Iron, Kyle. It's Lou Ferrigno and Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'll give him the wrong advices.
He comes to me for advices. So... it's not that hard for me to give him the wrong advices.
I'm going to have breakfast with him and his dad and try to get into his head. How are you going to get into his head, Arnold? The competition's tomorrow. It's done. Like, what could possibly happen?
No, he's going to be in the back room while they're getting their pump on. And he's going to say, hey, Lou. He's just going to keep saying his name and standing really close to him. Make it awkward.
Like, I don't understand what, like, how getting into his head was gonna do, but yeah. Thank you for being an asshole.
Apparently,
yeah. I mean,
of course, he's the ultimate opportunist. Arnold's a legend.
He does. I do love that moment of him smoking the joint, eating fried chicken, and singing happy. I want to sing happy birthday to Louis. Like, oh, that's nice.
I like how polite he is to his parents. Oh, that's how you can tell he's a monster. He's a sociopath. He's like the nicest guy in the world to his dad.
Of course.
Just tears them apart as soon as they get in there together.
Hey, Louis, you know your shit, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I think that would have been interesting dynamic to have, like, Woody know that. Like know, like, oh, this guy listens to me. Like, if I tell him to jump, he'll do it. Like, maybe I'll give him some bad advice. Like, I know how I fight. I know what I would like to do to him. Maybe I'll maneuver him into my plan or something. But no, we don't get that sophisticated.
This movie reminds me of the... It's completely different, but it's the same... It's like the same DNA, I feel. It's The Mexican with Brad Pitt and Julia Roberts. Like, it's like a weird... there's kidnapping and it's like a road trip kind of movie and we talk about gay stuff, but it's the same kind of idea where it's mostly just a jibber jabber movie and nothing really happens. I don't know. It's weird. I don't know why was this a thing? I don't get it.
The 90s was a very subversive time. Like, I think it was very subversive. There was a lot of zigging when you expect them to zag kind of stuff going on, where it's like, we're going to take something that is advertised as a straight-up action film and make a goofy comedic romp out of it or something instead. Yeah. With lots of gay jokes, because yeah. 90s.
Correct.
We've come a long way, kind of.
Well, we thought we did, and then we realized we left a lot of people behind. Like, oh shit, we're still waiting for them to catch up.
It's like, okay, pump the brakes, let's turn it around.
We came a long way, but yes, we forgot some folks. They didn't get there. Kind of surprised to see Bruce and the other buffer in this movie.
Yeah, both the buffers. Bruce is in the middle, like, flashback sequence for Antonio Banderas, and of course Michael does the ring announcement for the final fight at the end.
Dude, what was with, like, was Rod Stewart bigger than we know? Like,
that's accurate.
Like, I don't even know. I know one Rod Stewart song, besides All for One, and it's Maggie, or whatever the fuck that song is. Yeah, it's terrible.
Something, something sexy.
It's like, I do not understand his celebrité. Like, I don't get it. I'm like, I'm like, he's not good looking. He's got a dumb haircut. He's not really a talented singer. His music sucks. I mean,
all facts.
I'm like, I don't get it. I don't understand it.
No, I mean,
Was he a vibe or something? I don't know.
He has an audience. I'll just say that
much. Yeah, yeah.
Not you or I, but he does have a
fan. Not us. But yeah. We do. Okay, so we get a whole bunch of cameos in here. Kevin Costner, Wesley Snipes, James Woods, Drew Carey. I'm like, Drew Carey and Jennifer Tilly talking to each other, which was kind of funny.
Yeah, in the stands together. Like, they're just kind of, she's just like leaning over a seat, like talking behind her to him.
And I know who he is. I just didn't know what he looked like as an old man. But Tony Curtis is also in the crowd.
Yeah, I had the same reaction where I was like, I feel like I should know who that is, but don't.
I was like, yeah, I've only seen him in like Spartacus, and I think he's in The Robe as well.
Yeah, the boxing cameos in this movie are outstanding. I'll give it that. I will give it quite a lot of credit for that. They got everybody. Like, name an entity. Like, they got the journalists, they got the commentators. We have Jim Lampley doing commentary with Larry Merchant and George Foreman, who were on the HBO commentary team at the time. That was pretty amazing. I miss those guys so much.
I think Daniel Tosh has a new show on YouTube, and he doesn't interview celebrities or comedians like every other comedian does. He just interviews regular people. He interviewed one of the guys from that do all the Lifetime movies, who was in that movie Bros. But he interviewed, I think it's like my favorite George Foreman. He interviewed one of his sons.
I mean, one of his six, seven sons,
all named George Foreman. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty great. Yeah. But on top of that, we got Teddy Atlas, who is still doing boxing, like social media commentary these days. He's mostly on YouTube. He's still involved in the sport in some capacity. He's Antonio's trainer during the garden sequence. We have the Duvas name dropped, so it'd be Kathy and Lou Duva, who are promoters and trainers. I don't remember if the Goosens are in there. One funny cameo that felt very, very, very intentional to me is Angel Man Freddy. I wouldn't expect you to know that name, Kyle. He's shaking his head, just so you know, folks. Angel Man Freddy was a born-again Christian fighter in the mid to late 90s who fought Floyd Mayweather at one point. Very good fighter, but he was mostly known for being like a hellion covered in like tattoos and like hopped up on cocaine at all hours of the day, who almost died and became a born-again Christian. And I can't help but think maybe Woody Harrelson's character was partially inspired by him, because his facial hair in this movie and his bald head, kind of signature look for Angel Man Freddy, as well as the tattoos, plus the born again thing, and also his explanation as to how that happened. He got in like a car crash and saw Jesus, I guess, I think that was the story Woody told in the movie as to how that happened for him. But yeah, Angel Man Freddy actually is shown in the film at one point, and I was like, they could have shown any number of active fighters at the time, but to pick him, he wasn't exactly a household name in 2000 or whatever, but
there it is.
Is there any reason for Lucy Liu to be in this movie? Like, anything whatsoever? Like, that character, just the character.
I think, and this is very cynical, I think the trailer shot of her getting punched in the face, her saying, I just don't like you, and her getting punched in the face was a big part of the trailer for this movie.
Oh, okay.
Cat fight, to quote Kramer from Seinfeld. Cat fight. Great taste, less filling, Kyle. Never forget. Great taste, less filling.
Who won the fight in this movie?
Did you not finish it?
I couldn't. I had to get set up, and then if you turn off, I had to like turn off the TV. I'm like, I'll watch the rest of my laptop while I wait for Trevor to get going. But I turn off the TV, and the Amazon thing's like, oh, you're still watching this on another device. It's going to take 10 minutes before this will fix itself. So I'm like, shit. So I didn't get to see who won the fight.
Well, the fight is very, very long. They show every bit of it pretty much. There's no montage like you would get in most rock. There's quite a lot of titties. A little bit of ass, too. A little bit of ace.
Yeah.
A lot of titties that... difficult to understand why the titties are there.
Okay,
if I'm being honest.
So walk with me here. This is. I brought it up. I wanted to know. Can you tell me who won though, real quick?
Oh, it's a draw.
Of course it is. Why did I ask?
Okay, the worst thing that can happen in sports.
It really
although
is. Yeah.
I take that in boxing. It's a little different. I do maintain that there is a place for draws in boxing, but most other sports, if it ends in a tie, we riot.
I think a quick knockout also sucks. When McGregor knocked out Jose Aldo in like 11 seconds flat, I'm just like, what
the fuck?
Yeah,
if you paid for that card, if you paid.
Dude, what my buddy paid for, he's like, this could be a good fight, man. And he's like, I paid for the card. We all kind of like chipped in, and then he just knocked him out in like 11 seconds. He's like, what the fuck? He's
like, I hope that undercard was worth something.
I think the undercard was okay. I think there might have been another good fight that night. But so I think what was happening, so while these two are fighting, we go, how many rounds are in boxing? Was it like 12 or some shit?
If it's a non-title fight, so it should have been 10 at most.
Okay. As they're fighting, and the rounds vary in length, but they're seeing hallucinating, both of them. Woody keeps seeing boobs and Jesus, titties and Jesus, as it were. And Antonio at one point is visualizing Lolita like dry humping Woody in his corner. So I think there was an idea here that they don't really want to fight each other. They have to fight each other, but you have to maintain that edge. Like I said, you have to maintain that Michael Jordan, like, I have to make up something to keep me wanting to play, like, wanting to keep fighting. And it makes sense for Antonio Banderas. His is just like, that's a woman I love. I just mouth I love her, and I'm picturing her banging my best friend. That makes sense. That's something that you can use in a fight, I would say.
Yeah, that's straightforward, but the titties, Kyle. But what about the titties?
I feel like Woody is like giving up, and he's being distracted. He's just like you said, like he's come to Jesus kind of thing. Jesus is kind of like, he's supposed to soften that hard side of him. And the titties, I mean, obviously that does something different, but I think it's distracting for him. Like, he's not being able to focus on the fight.
Everything you're saying makes sense, but it's it's frustrating because, like, this is, I'm not gonna lie, this is one of my favorite things about doing this podcast, is taking bad things and trying to find a way to make it work, like, yeah, iron it out a little bit. And Antonio's stuff is pretty straightforward. And both of them, actually, there's flickers of things that make sense, where it's, mm-hmm, like it's representative of their insecurities. Like, Antonio, yeah, has the thing where he sees the ref naked at one point. We see ass. That's like, that's stupid as fuck, but I get it. Like, I think I understand what you're getting at.
Yeah.
And the thing with Lolita Davidovich, you know, mounting Woody in the corner. Again, he's insecure. His demons are coming after him. And so he's feeling in a weakened state while he's in the middle of the fight. Woody's stuff, though, it's just like, are you dying or something?
Yeah.
like is this brain death happening right now? Because this is all over the place. It doesn't make sense. Because, like, a way you could have ironed it out a little, made it make more consistent sense, is, like, they have a thing that they say very casually in the movie, that Woody has never been down in a fight before. He gets knocked down, like, 6 times in this fucking fight. That is the weirdest thing in this movie, is that the last fight in this movie has both guys going down like 5 or 6 times. That is very strange. Like, that's very unusual. And he also gets cut in this fight, which is a big part of it. Like, it's a bit of a turning point, because the opening of it is Antonio goes down twice in the first round. So it's almost like his nightmare relived, kind of. But he bounces back from it. And then the following round, he cuts Woody, and the tide turns for a round or something. They're mostly at equilibrium throughout the entire fight. But something you could have done with Woody and his visions of titties or whatever is like Kyle was hinting at, like show that there's less of a willingness to engage or something, and then find a way to spin that, because he never stops being a savage in the fight. Like, he's in it all the way through. Like, through the choreography of the boxing, you never really get that sense that he's wilting or he's taking his foot off the gas or anything. Like, you easily could have done that with the choreography. Just show him have Antonio right where he wants him and show him, like, tying up for no real reason or, like, easing off in the like, he hears, at the end of a round in boxing, they have a clapper. They have somebody, like, clack two wooden planks together and go clack, clack to signal 10 seconds. Like, maybe, have him hear the clapboard and, like, hold off like very blatantly or something. There's easy ways to telegraph this to the audience. And then on top of that, you have both characters having, like, what little we know about them. They have these psychological weights on them in the form of Antonio is scared that he's going to get knocked out again, and he is anxious about not missing the count again. Maybe do a thing where he gets knocked down and he bounces up too quick. Like, instead of waiting for the 8 count or something, he just, like, bounces back up and his legs are still rubbery and he compromises himself. Like, he loses a round very badly because of that. And then Woody's case, he's never been down before, so maybe play up that fact. Like, show him be, like, really frazzled and put on his heels at that, but maybe make Antonio not aware of that. And then on top of that, Woody has a thing about the judges, where his baggage that he carries into the fight is that he had an incident where he thought he was going to be a champion, but he got robbed on the scorecards, or at least he thinks he was robbed. So it stands to reason when you get to the later rounds, he's going to want to finish the fight. Like, he's not going to want to rely on those judges again. So knowing that about him, you would expect him to put his foot on the gas at that point. But these are all things that we know, but not many of them are communicated to us. I did like the bit where the judge is flipping the bird, though. I did think that was funny. The titties I found vexing and confusing, but the judges flipping them off I thought was pretty funny.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, though the boobs, that even threw me off, because I'm just like, wait, this is in Vegas. This is usually televised. I'm like, they can't go topless, like, right? Like, they can't. They're not supposed to do that.
Or if you're going to make, like, a gag out of it, like, there's a couple of things he says about fighting that are kind of, like, they're things that are talked about in boxing, where one is he has an anecdote at the diner about Sugar Ray Robinson drinking blood.
Yeah.
That is a thing that happened. He did do that in front of Jake LaMotta to psych him out. Like, it was a gesture. It wasn't a thing he actually did consistently. It was just, like, a one-time thing, as far as I know. But the other one is, like, he talks about...
I'm gonna be sick. Oh, God. I'm picturing it. I'm like, I'm gonna throw up. It's so fucking, I'm sorry, gross. Kyle.
Yeah, there's certain things that make people queasy. I didn't realize that was a trigger point for Kyle.
Yeah, I don't like I don't like blood. I don't like seeing blood. Oh, man, that's so gross.
Anyway.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
The other one is that when Lucy Liu enters the film, when she offers to pay their bill at the diner and then pay for gas to get them to Vegas, she joins them along for the ride, and he's enamored with her. He wants to bang her, and she wants to bang too.
Yeah.
Like, it's mutual. And he has this whole thing about, like, he needs to fuck. Like, daddy wants to fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
Usually, as far as I know, the stereotype is fighters abstain from fucking. Women weakens legs, to quote Mickey from Rocky. but maybe what you could have done with that is he doesn't get to fuck. And so he's itchy. Like he goes into the fight and he's like,
Yeah,
and, like, they're taping up his hands. He's like, can I just, like, jerk off real quick? It's like, yeah. No, we got to go. Like fight time, man. We got, like, 10 minutes. He's like, you don't understand. Like, I got to clear the pipes. Like it's all backed up.
Yeah. Yeah, that actually probably makes more sense. It's just like, yeah, he's super horny.
Like, he sees the ring card girls and he's just like,
oh no.
Yeah. Oh no.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, but that would be a gag. Like, but the intensity of the fighting in the film doesn't support that kind of goofiness, and yet it's still there. Actually, as we're having this conversation, Kyle, just about the fight portion of the movie, which is very long, by the way. It's like a half hour at least. Man, Oliver Stone would have directed the hell out of this movie. And wrote it, too. Like, I don't know if he has any interest in boxing. Clearly he has some interest in sports, given that he did Any Given Sunday. But his direction and his editing, a lot of the fight portion of this movie has vibes of some of his work in the 90s. I think with him at the helm or something, this would have been a much better and more interesting film.
Yeah. He could probably do better. Anybody could have done better, really. I don't have anything else to say. I think I'm tapped out already. I'm like, I can't.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Kyle. We have a drop for Brad from the Cinema Speak podcast has a drop for, oh, Trevor, I'm sorry. Unfortunately, we don't have a, oh, Kyle, I'm sorry drop. But I owe you, man. Like you might get a Blu-ray in the mail or something in the next few weeks. Because, like, yeah, I fucked us bad.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's not your fault. It's the director's fault, really. He's the one who did this.
Writer, director, Kyle. And on top of that, it, like, not to belabor the conclusion of this discussion, but this movie even looks bad. Like, yeah. I'm sure you noticed that too, that because this movie is mostly car and because it's like backcountry roads from LA to Vegas, there's not shit to look at. And on top of that, it's like the sun is blazing and the actors look uncomfortable whenever we're outdoors. Like, it looks crazy fucking hot and everybody's overlit. It has a bad look to it. So it just has so little going for it. And I didn't even mention the boxing. Like, the boxing choreography is nothing. Like, it's nothing remarkable.
Yeah. I was going to say, even I was just like, Trevor's going to have nothing to say about the box. Like, even I know that this isn't good choreography. It's not about the choreography. It's about what's happening in between the bout, like, in between the actual rounds.
Yeah, I think I understand what they were trying to do with the Lolita Davidovich character, where it's like she's kind of like paralleling their desperate bid for fortune and glory in Vegas. Like, she's there for investment opportunities. And like, she fails, they fail, and then they all ride off into the sunset together. And it's supposed to be like, it's like the ending of White Men Can't Jump, basically, where it's like, oh, we're right back where we started, but it's okay because we're all buddies here anyway. So I kind of get that, but I do maintain that it would have been a much, much more dynamic and interesting movie if you really played into the psychology of these two characters leading up to the fight. I mentioned before the mics heat up, getting them to the venue, like getting them off the road a half hour earlier and just having them, like, giving them like a day or two to train and prepare for the fight. And on top of that, we never even have any discussion about them making weight. We just have to assume that they're on weight.
They're on, yeah. That's a huge part of it. What the
fuck? Are you kidding me? Like, 24-hour notice? They're just, I mean, I guess. That I don't know how common that is, but it's often believed to be, it's often like talked about as being like the worst part of the sport, honestly.
I mean, I think 6 months is a reasonable amount of time to...
No, that's too long.
Is it too long? Okay. Too long. 6 months.
No, but at the drop of a hat, just like conveniently both of them are on weight. It's a little weird. It would have been nice to have seen them weigh in or something and just get to the venue, see them work out a bit, you know, training montage kind of stuff. And on top of that, I do think maybe making a villain out of the woman driving them there would have been a nice twist. Like really, because she knows both of them intimately. She has, and she also talks about how much money she wants to make in Vegas. She wants to earn her fortune in Vegas. Why not place a bet and stack the deck in your favor?
Mm-hmm.
Like, really put all your chips on Woody and just psychologically rip apart Antonio Banderas, who is known to be the weaker of the two and is insecure. And then, hey, you can have a surprising finale where he upsets the apple cart and knocks out Woody, who has never been down before, and then she's pissed at both of them because they both fucked her, even though they didn't know that she was betting on them. Hey, I just wrote a better movie. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Why aren't we being paid, Kyle? Goddamn.
Yeah. Because we don't know anybody in Hollywood, Trevor. We have no nepotism. We have no way to get there.
We don't know people. You don't know nobody. Good luck with that. Anyway, we'll keep this one short and sweet, though, because I can tell this one hurt you. This robbed you of something, Kyle. I do owe you, like, a lot.
Like, it's all right. A lot. I think next month is going to be pretty fun, so.
Yeah, I guarantee it. To quote the Men's Warehouse guy, a.k.a. my dad, because they bear a striking resemblance to one another. I guarantee it.
Yeah. You're going to like the way you look. I guarantee it.
This concludes mostly Hoodie month here at Catching Up on Cinema. We have something very special and very different in store for y'all in April. So look forward to that. In the meantime, though, this has been our review of Play It to the Bone, written and directed by Ron Shelton, released in the year 2000. But in the meantime, if you would like to catch up on any of our other Catching Up on Cinema content, you can find all of that collected on our website at catchinguponcinema.com. You can also find us on the social medias in the form of the Instagram at Catching Up on Cinema, as well as the Twitter/X at Catching Cinema. So feel free to hit me up at either of those. And the podcast is available on pretty much every platform you can imagine, including Bitcade. So fucking Google it.
Google it.
That being said, thank you so much for listening, and we will catch you next time.
Oh my God, that sucks.